You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 30th July 2012 on Monocle 24. Midori House is brought to you in association with Thailand. Bonsoir et bienvenue to a special edition of Midori House with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Sophie Grove.
For the next 2 weeks in celebration of the Olympics, we'll be broadcasting from a different national venue every day. Tonight, we're live at Club France, the glorious temporary home of all things French at Old Billingsgate Market on the banks of the River Thames.
Coming up in the next 60 minutes, we'll ask how French media are covering the Games with Bénédicte Pavillot, London correspondent for France 24. We'll also be joined by Pascal Grierson, CEO of French Radio London, to discuss France's successes so far.
And Axel Lemar, French MP for London, will reflect on what the Games means for France's sixth big city, and that's London.
We'll also play a couple of French songs and even drag in the odd Olympic French athlete. All that coming up live here from Club France on the banks of the Thames.
But first, let's cross back to the studio at Midori House for the news headlines with James Luckhurst.
Monocle 24 News. Syrian government forces have been continuing their assault with artillery, ground forces and helicopter gunships on rebellion-held areas of the second city, Aleppo. Officials said one area, Salah ad-Din, had been recaptured, but rebels insisted the battle there was still going on. In other developments, Syria's most senior diplomat in the UK has resigned in protest at the violent and oppressive actions of the regime of President Bashar al-Assad, according to the Foreign Office. In what's seen as a significant blow to Damascus, the chargé d'affaires, Khaled al-Ayoubi, informed the British authorities that he was no longer willing to represent the government amid the brutal repression of rebels. India's railway ministry has said that a fire on a Chennai-bound express train has claimed 30 lives and injured at least 20 passengers. The fire broke out in a coach of the Tamil Nadu Express during the early hours of Monday near Nellore, around 500 kilometres from Hyderabad, when most of the passengers were asleep. The former graduate student accused of opening fire on moviegoers in a screening of the latest Batman movie near Denver 10 days ago has been formally charged with 142 criminal accounts, including first-degree murder charges. The charges were formally presented as 24-year-old James Holmes made his second court appearance since his arrest. The massacre took place during a packed showing of The Dark Knight Rises shortly after midnight on the 20th of July. Burma says it strongly rejects accusations over its handling of unrest in the state of Rakhine following some of the country's worst sectarian clashes in June. United Nations envoy Thomas Quintana is in Burma to discuss human rights issues with President Thein Sein and other officials. The country's foreign minister, Wunawuna Maung Luin, said maximum restraint had been exercised in the region and that democratization was still going ahead in Burma.
Myanmar strongly rejects the accusations made by some quarters that abuses and excessive use of force were made by the authorities in dealing with the situation. Peace and stability is indispensable for the ongoing democratization and reform process in Myanmar.
The UN's Thomas Quintana said the information presented would need further investigation.
It was very important for me to come today to this press conference. It was very informed, a press conference, a lot of explanations. I'm now going to assess, analyze carefully the information that was given to me today. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Uganda's health minister, Christine Ondoa, has said that an outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus has killed 14 people in the country, including a woman who died in the capital, Kampala. There's no treatment and no vaccine against Ebola, which is transmitted by close personal contact and, depending on the strain, kills up to 90% of those who contract the virus. Mrs. Ondoa said efforts were underway to contain the spread.
So far we have 34 contacts of health workers from the hospital. These are being traced who have had ever come in contact with the patients. But then the community tracing is also beginning. So as my colleagues mentioned, the number will keep increasing as we trace the contacts more.
And the British government is seeking urgent reform of the key interest rate rigged by a number of banks, including Barclays. The reform is designed to draw a line under a transatlantic scandal that's threatening to damage London's reputation as a financial centre. The government set the terms for a swift review of the LIBOR rate to be carried out by regulator Martin Wheatley in time for a recommendation to be included in a draft law making its way through Parliament. And those are the top stories here at Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, James. It is 6:06 here, 18:06 rather, here in London. You're listening to a special edition of Midori House, live from Club France on the banks of the River Thames. You're listening to Midori House, broadcasting live from Club France here at Old Billingsgate Market on the banks of the Thames here in London. I'm Steve Bloomfield and I'm also here with Sophie Grove. Hello, Sophie.
Hello.
Hello. So this is the first of 10 special shows we're doing over the next sort of 2 weeks.
It's incredibly exciting. It's very breezy down here on the Thames, and it's a beautiful spot, actually, the French have here.
It is, and luckily, I think the weather's going to hold. I say luckily because we are outside on the terrace, the smoking terrace as well.
I know, that is quite French too. And also, we have to confess to our listeners that we took a little detour in the shop earlier and bought some supposedly French attire
yes.
to really add the kind of Gallic edge to this show.
They are, I think you call them, describe them as French sporting berets. possibly. I'm getting weird looks from one of our guests who we're about to bring in the moment. France has had a rather spectacular start to the Olympic Games. We just flicked through a few of the front pages today. Le Monde swimming a historic victory, which is highlighting the French swimmers in the 4x100 relay, beating the Americans last night.
And L'Equipe, which has got some incredible swimming pictures as well. I can see some very chic ladies reading it over there. They're looking at Camille Muffat's win on the 400 metres freestyle, which is incredible, and we'll talk about that later too.
I rather like the headline there as well, they walk on water. Figaro, after conquering the world, Camille Lacourte, the pretty face of French swimming, is hunting the supreme title in the 100 metres backstroke final.
And France Soir, the 2012 Olympics. Muffat already on top and Manadou disappoints. So it's looking at Camille Muffat again and her gold, and then looking at a disappointing fifth place for Lua Manadou in the 100-metre backstroke.
And to discuss a bit more of the coverage, we're joined now by Pascal Grierson, the CEO of France Radio London, who was the gentleman who was mocking our hats earlier, weren't you, Pascal?
Well, you know, I was just trying to join in, really, and just, can I say, you do look lovely with your hats on. It's just that they're just very ugly hats. I'm sorry about that.
I love the way you said, they're not French.
They're not French at all. They're basically Yorkshire flat caps.
But what about the jaunty angle?
You're doing a lot better than you, Stephen, I'm afraid.
Right, fine. Okay. Anyway, nice to have you here, Pascal. So what have you made of it so far?
Well, the Club France or just the whole Olympic chaos?
The whole Olympics.
Well, you know, it's a great thing, of course, and I mean, the thing that I don't like, of course, is that, you know, the city spends so much time beautifying itself for sort of months before the whole thing kicks off, and it's been difficult to get around, and roads are blocked, and in fact, ironically, this last weekend was quite funny because the whole of South Kensington and Hammersmith and basically the whole of West London was completely blocked out for the cycling, and of course the French were all quite uppity about it because a good big
they
portion
live
of them live there. So
well,
that was quite funny. It was quite ironic. I mean, why didn't they do it somewhere else in North London or East London or something? No,
where
all the French are, they should do that. But no, I mean, look, it's all very exciting, and I've been down at Wembley Arena to see the badminton. That's fun. It's a great game. It's worth having a look at. I try to be as global about, you know, following the Olympics as possible. I don't have a favourite sport really, apart from possibly tennis. But the swimming was very exciting. It seems to me that the swimming is always just terrific to watch in the Olympics.
And it's also been incredibly good for France.
Yes, as it turns out.
I mean, there's actual palpable excitement in this French little corner of things, because I mean, they're doing so well. I think they're fourth
in the medals table.
Do you think they're surprised at their own success in the pool particularly?
They probably are. I mean, the thing is, I didn't actually realise myself that the French had such a strong swimming contingent, to be honest. You know, good for them. I think they probably are slightly surprised. You know, the typical sport that they tend to go for is obviously football, but there have been and some rugby, of course. But they tend to have some problems with that recently. Maybe they're just turning themselves to different sports now. Who knows? You know, maybe they'll just do really well with random things like, you know, shot putting.
Or even like handball, where we just saw a very exciting handball game, which I never thought I'd ever say those words, but it finished 18-all between France and Spain just now.
It is an exciting game, though, actually.
Almost more exciting than
beach volleyball.
And what about the coverage in terms of the pressure that the media puts on the athletes? I mean, you see in the UK, they can be quite brutal if the athletes don't perform. And it looks like even, you know, in Francois, sort of, talking about you know, the disappointing performance of some of the swimmers, and particularly, do you think that? I mean, how vicious is the sports coverage in terms of the French?
So actually, I think my answer to that is more about the French psyche. I'm half French, half English, so I can see it from both sides of the fence. And the thing is, the French generally take themselves very, very seriously. Okay, so if you start with that viewpoint right at the centre of everything, that will feed the fact that they really do put a huge amount of pressure on themselves as a nation, and therefore their sporting heroes who are representing them. When the English, you know, do their best, and as long as they do their best, so Addington last night, you know, got her bronze, you know, and the coverage on the BBC was, well, good for her, you know, she was defending her title, but, you know, she was on the podium. So, and they didn't say anything negative about her, and I didn't see the press this morning, but I suspect that actually what they did is clap her on the back rather than give her a hard time. I think the French are just very hard on themselves, basically.
And how have you been covering yourselves on France Radio London?
French Radio London, but that's okay.
Apologies.
That's right. Well, we spent a lot of time building up to the event with regular sports shows and sports reports. We cover sports in our Journal des Sports every morning. So we've been covering, you know, what the team's been doing in France, and also, you know, other events that are qualifying events over the course of the last few months. And now that we're into the Olympics, we've got a team of people here at the Club France who are doing reports every morning and every evening, and then for exceptional stuff during the day, and then all weekend as well. So, you know, we're going to be all over this place, and then we'll have some time spent over at the Olympic Village. But at the end of the day, us as a radio station, we're more about the... We're not a sports radio station. We're going to leave that to the guys who've got huge budgets and, you know, are here to do exactly that. So Radio France, France Télévisions, RMC, RTL, Europe 1, all of those guys will do the really big, big, heavy sports reporting stuff. We'll do more of a kind of a... And we've concentrated a lot on the stuff that's around the sport itself. So it's the festival, you know, the BT... River of whatever, I can't remember what it was called, actually, to be to Live River something or whatever. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff happening in and around London that's really worth covering and celebrating as well, around the fact that this is just a sporting event.
And do you think that your listeners really sort of see this as their games, in the sense that they're London residents, or do you think that they're a little bit envious that it's not happening in Paris?
Well, I've heard it said a couple of times. I mean, I was talking to the ambassador, actually, about 2-3 weeks ago, and I think he did his best to suggest that he wasn't at all sorry that these aren't taking place in Paris, but you could tell very clearly that he was. So, you know, I mean, there's definitely an element to that. Yeah, sure. Do they think it's their event? I mean, knowing the French as they do, they probably will think that, yes. But it's not. It's, you know, it's anybody's for the taking. It's London's event, let's face it.
Pascal Brisson, CEO of French Radio London, thank you very much for joining us. And we're going to be joined by France 24's London correspondent, Benedicte Pavio, right after this. You're listening to Midori House on Monocle 24.
At one of the world's busiest seaports, Laem Chabang, it's easy to see why Thailand is such a dynamic trading hub. With our entrepreneurial, multi-skilled workforce, we're busy making sure vital goods get to market on time, every time. It's this hands-on approach that's made us the globe's fifth largest container shipping nation. But it's not only goods we're exporting. Our pop music is a big hit too. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
On the latest edition of the menu, we discover the Chinese delicacies you don't yet find from restaurants, but soon might. And if you want something exotic and something European at the same time, what would you say about fruits such as carambolas, passion fruits, pepinos, guavas and so on, all grown in Croatia? We also get another example on how to appreciate local food more as we visit a great Lisbon restaurant that does what so many other Portuguese restaurants don't, that is to specialize on local fish.
A big part of our concept is quality.
That's The Menu, premiering every Friday at 1900 hours UK time in association with Krug.
You're listening to Midori House, broadcasting live from Club France with me, Sophie Grove, and Steve Bloomfield. We'll be speaking to two Olympic fencers next, but first, this is Chameleon by Shin. And that was Chameleon by Shim from her brand new chart-topping album released last month. You're listening to a special edition of Midori House.
And we are here live at Club France at Old Billingsgate Market, right on the River Thames. And we've been joined by two Olympians, gold medal-winning Olympians, no less, Fabrice Jeannot and his brother Jérôme Jeannot, who are wonderful fencing champions. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Now, you both won gold in Athens and in Beijing. You're now sadly retired, so couldn't make it a triple this time. How are you finding your Olympic experience so far here in London?
Oh, we are in London only since this...
4 hours?
Yeah.
4 hours?
Yeah. We just get dropped from the train, so from now it's really nice. Good atmosphere and spirit in the Club France. So we're starting to get some medals in the French delegation. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, you're not doing too badly so far, really, are you?
Yeah.
And tell us what it was like in Athens and Beijing, so competing for your country and being able to really to win.
Yeah, but as a competitor, it's a totally different atmosphere because you really focused on your competition, and the only thing you're thinking about during the whole stay in the Olympic Village is, yes, I want to compete, I want to win the gold medal, and so you don't really have time to make funny things before your competition. After, of course, you have to celebrate this. And for the moment, as we just arrived and as we are retired now, we are only, having fun and enjoying
all the good things and great stuff here. Mm.
How did you start fencing? I mean, it's such an elegant sport. Is it Pilot in France, and where are you two from in France? Give us an insight into your career.
We're from a little French West Indies island, Martinique.
Oh, yeah.
And it's popular in France, but it's not really massive in Martinique because it's really hot and it's not the first sport where you can go.
It's really hot, and then you have to dress up in a massive costume which covers every inch of your body.
Yeah, that's right. So we went to fencing because my parents were fencers. So they brought us when we were babies at the club when they were training. And after we just take a try and it was fun. So we decided to go on and we follow a path that led us to the Olympics.
Now tell us one thing that... we don't really understand what happens inside the athletes' village. There's 10,000 people there. You're all relatively young. You're all relatively fit. How can I put this? You're all once you've done your competition, there's not much to do, but there's lots of other young, relatively fit people around. What goes on?
Oh, you know, there is a. It's just like in Las Vegas. What happens in the the Olympic Village stays in the Olympic Village. But you, as you can guess, there are a lot of I don't know, interactions between people inside the village. It's really friendly. There's a really great atmosphere because everybody is there for the same. And when everybody is okay with their competition, you know, it's really
really, really, really friendly. So no, it's a really particular atmosphere.
Everything is done to make the athlete's life really easy. So it's the perfect conditions.
Yes, but it's a little bit out of reality. It's it's really hard. Definitely. When you come back home and you, what there's no meal for me.
You get used to the life.
Yeah. It's really out of reality.
And tell us what you're really watching while you're here in London. Are you going to be looking at the fencing? And is there anyone you've got your eye on in terms of really up-and-coming talent or any Frenchman that you're really rooting for?
Of course, I think that people from our weapon, épée, the French fencers in épée, we will follow them. And as we are here for a short stay, we'll try to go to see other sports. We have tickets for handball,
volleyball, judo.
Of course, we have a lot of friends in judo, and for now we are quite good with 3 medals, judo and.
So you've got a good mix of different sports then.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good. Well, Jerome and Fabrice Genet, thank you very much for joining us. You're listening to Midori House.
The Olympics. On Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24.
Olympiskite igrissa pu Monocle 24.
Lontosta maailmalle Monocle 24.
El alaava l'Olympia tähti ilal Monocle 24.
Die Olympischen Spiele auf Monocle 24.
Shooting Olympique zai Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
After a mammoth 70-day relay journey and a three-hour opening ceremony, a billion people waited to see where the all-important Olympic flame would end up. And no one was disappointed. The 204 copper bowls that each participating country entered the stadium with suddenly turned into individual flames, which rose on long poles to form a giant cauldron.
Designed by the much-feted British product designer Thomas Heatherwick, the cauldron was built by the Australian firm FCT Flames. Monocle's design editor Hugo McDonald spoke to the managing director, Constanta Manies, earlier.
It was fantastic. It really was a great moment, I think. And the whole opening ceremony was fantastic, and certainly feel very privileged and honoured to have been able to be a part of that.
FCT Flames is the manufacturer of the cauldron, obviously. When did you first sort of get involved in the project? When did the first discussions take place?
Well, firstly, I suppose I've got to say that there is a number of people involved in the cauldron. What we do is we take an artistic vision, and the artistic vision was very much Heatherwick's, and it was a fantastic concept for a cauldron. But we take the artistic requirement for such projects, and then we do a lot of development work, R&D, to determine how to produce the sort of effect that's needed. And then we do the engineering for that, the manufacture of our portion, and then we deliver our equipment, gets installed, we commission it, get involved in rehearsals and such like. So these projects typically begin about 1 year before the opening, and it's a reasonably, timeline even at that. But so we actually did have discussions about a year ago to start the whole process. I should also acknowledge the fact that we worked with a British company, Stage One, who in fact also built a lot of the mechanicals to do with the cauldron. And and we had a tremendous cooperation with Stage One. It was really a very good project to work with them on that.
And Constantine, you mentioned there that it was a very different idea for a cauldron. I know that you were also responsible for the Sydney 2000 and the Athens 2004 cauldrons, which were maybe a little more standard. But what were the difficulties that were faced with this, which was much more sort of mechanical and much more of a moment rather than an object itself?
Well, the cauldrons, as you would have noted from the past, and we've been involved in lots of them since Sydney. We began with Sydney, and since then we've been involved in pretty much all of the winter and summer games, youth games, Asian games, Pan American, Arab games, and so on. So we produce the equipment that produces the flames for you know, a lot of events. There is usually a fairly fixed cauldron that emerges at some point and is lit. The concept for this particular cauldron was that there was no cauldron really to begin with. Each nation bore a portion of it, coming together, the 204 separate flames, merging into one large flame for the duration of the games, symbolising all the nations coming together. And then finally at the end it'll be dispersed again to all the nations that participated, so that the, you know, the cauldron will be gone. So that was the concept of it. To achieve all that, there were really, you know, 204 separate, you know, burner systems involved. The equipment that went towards lighting and monitoring these flames had to be, you know, integrated into the mechanical moving parts of the cauldron. So there was a lot of moving parts. There was a lot of equipment that we supplied, that others supplied, and to, you know, have all that come together, not foul up in any way, was part of the challenge, as was to, you know, develop the small flames that would be reliable, that would then merge to form the sort of look that was wanted. But they were all challenges that we, you know, had to address along the way. And then there's also the aspect of all the heat that that is generated. There was quite a lot of heat that's generated from these flames, and where that heat goes is a very important part of our study, to determine, you know, what might be affected and what needs to be protected, and particularly with people and equipment. So there have been, you know, times when these sorts of studies have revealed that the cauldron needs to be modified in some way because of some danger. But anyway, all these are part and parcel of what we do, and have become very adept at doing over the last 12 years or so.
One of the biggest sort of tickets that the UK or London really won the Olympic bid on was how sustainable and environmentally friendly the Olympics themselves were going to be. Is this a very sort of environmentally friendly design as well?
Sustainability is a big theme in the whole of the Games, and as suppliers we had to demonstrate what we do to contribute to sustainability in the environment. So there were a lot of small aspects to what we do as an organisation, you know, including things like recycling and you know, copying both sides of paper and so on and so forth. But with the equipment supplied in particular, we specifically designed and supplied equipment that is going to be reusable. So the equipment that we supplied, you know, will be reused on other occasions going forward into the future, and that's a big part of the sustainability. Even the delivery, the packaging and so on is reusable. The fuel being used in the cauldron is natural gas, which is, you know, relatively more environmentally friendly than most other fuels, and so on. But throughout the whole process, sustainability has featured very largely in what we've done.
Wonderful. Also, I wanted to ask, we've heard rumours that one of the arms didn't rise the night before when it was being tested. Were you sort of wheeled in at the last minute to try and make sure that everything was fine for the ceremony itself?
Look, I'm not aware of any of the details. I you know, we have our engineers on site, very experienced, trained people, that their job is to, you know, get everything working properly on the night. As far as I'm aware, and from what I saw, everything worked the way it was meant to work.
That was Constantine Manias speaking to Hugo MacDonald a little bit earlier. In the next half hour of this special edition of Midori House, coming to you live from Club France, we'll be joined by a very good French journalist. We'll also be playing a little bit of music, and there'll be other bits and pieces, I promise. But first, let's hand back to the studio for the news headlines with James Luckhurst.
Syrian government forces have been continuing their assault with artillery, ground forces and helicopter gunships on rebel-held areas of the second city, Aleppo. Officials said one area, Salah ad-Din, had been recaptured, but rebels insist the battle there was still going on. In other developments, Syria's most senior diplomat in the UK has resigned in protest at the violent and oppressive actions of the regime of President Bashar al-Assad, according to the Foreign Office. In what's seen as a significant blow to Damascus, the chargé d'affaires, Khaled al-Ayoubi, informed the British authorities that he was no longer willing to represent the government amid the brutal repression of rebels. India's railway ministry has said that a fire on a Chennai-bound express train has claimed 30 lives and injured at least 20 passengers. The fire broke out in a coach of the Tamil Nadu Express during the early hours of Monday near Nellore, around 500 kilometres from Hyderabad. The former graduate student accused of opening fire on moviegoers in a screening of the latest Batman movie near Denver 10 days ago has been formally charged with 142 criminal counts, including first-degree murder charges. The charges were formally presented as 24-year-old James Holmes made his second court appearance since his arrest. Burma says it strongly rejects accusations over its handling of unrest in the state of Rakhine following some of the country's worst sectarian clashes in June. The United Nations envoy Thomas Quintana is in Burma to discuss human rights issues with President Thein Sein and other officials. And Uganda's health minister, Christine Ondoa, has said that an outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus has killed 14 people in the country, including a woman who died in the capital, Kampala. And those are the headlines here at Monocle 24.
And welcome back to Midori House. Now, it's only day three of the Games, and so far the French Olympic team is riding high in the medals table. The nation is currently in fourth place overall, with medals in judo, shooting and swimming. Yesterday, the French swimming squad stormed to a watery victory in the men's 400-metre relay, an event traditionally coveted by the US team.
To discuss French hopes, how the French view London, and various other bits and pieces around the Games, we're joined now by Bénédicte Paviot, UK correspondent for France 24. Bénédicte, welcome.
Good evening. Bonsoir. Yes, Club de France.
Bonsoir, indeed. We're quite blustery now at the moment. I still think the weather's going to hold. I'm confident. Bénédicte, how you're based here. You're part French, part British. How have you found the Games so far?
Well, actually, very exciting, and I'm not just talking from a French point of view, the French half of me. It is exciting to see people who've trained for years and who've dedicated, sacrificed so much, and to see them surpassing themselves. I think it's quite, I'm even thinking right now about some of the French winners. I'm even thinking of that young woman, the English woman who got the silver medal. And, you know, there she was in this incredible rain. I find it very inspiring. And I think that's been a lot of griping.
Didn't you?
I did. I thought I would just get it out of the way, since it is definitely not raining at the moment.
Yes, indeed. And how have you found, you're reporting about the London Games back to Paris, back to France.
Well, and the world,
and indeed,
actually.
And indeed the world now as well, of course. How do you get, what sense do you get of how people back in France are viewing these games? Games that, of course, as we mentioned earlier, they quite like to have had in the first place.
You know, yes, of course, Paris thought it was going to win it, but we know who won it, and it was London. And there's no sour grapes now. I think one of the things the French, a lot of French, are very happy about is that the French are not paying the bill, because that's quite a bill to foot in this economic crisis. We've mentioned the rain, we've mentioned the economic crisis, or I have, so enough of the doom and gloom. Let's get to the inspiring bit. And the inspiring bit is to see people, to see the French surpass the extraordinarily good Americans last night. That was a revenge from the last Olympic Games, and it was fantastic. I mean, to see that kind of exploit done. Then we had a French woman who actually set off the medals, which was Camille Muffat. She even set an Olympic Games record with 4 minutes, one Yes, 4 minutes, 1 second and 54 tenths of a second in the 400-metre freestyle at the Aquatic Centre. And, you know, the French president, who is in town today, who's been having lunch with the athletes, not just some tête-à-tête with some of them, but in that huge cafeteria that is open 24 hours a day with more food than you can imagine from all over the world. It's great to see that. I'm not sure the previous French president would have knuckled down in that, but this one has. He's coming here to the Club de France tonight. And I think it's great. We think there'll be quite a lot of medals in the athletics for the French team. And I feel a bit sorry at this point, I think, for the British, who have been really thought that they were going to get the cycling one.
We'll come back. We'll come back. I'm sure we will.
I wondered also, I mean, it's a little bit in the past now, but how was the opening ceremony received by the French?
I think the NHS nurses and children jumping up on beds was just lost on most people. And as for the hats, it reminds me of when I lived in New York. I thought that Britain suddenly was saying that it was Amish country, because I thought those hats, no disrespect. But I thought that they... I mean, and to get stuck in the Industrial Revolution, well, maybe that's my British sense of humour. But that self-deprecating nature I thought was great. I also liked Mr. Bean. I thought he was terrific. So I thought those were the best bits.
Do you think it matters that there were things that maybe French people or people elsewhere in the world didn't quite get or didn't understand? Does that really matter?
Well, as the daughter of a French film director, I'll say yes. Because the advantage that Danny Boyle has is that he understands what's going through le petit écran, as we say in French, that small screen. So I think he got it right for the most part. I thought the torch, the actual torch itself, is beautiful, and I thought the symbolism was beautiful as well. So that worked.
Just for those listening, I said we were by the banks of the Thames. That was proof that we were on the banks of the Thames. Sorry, Benedict, you were saying, before you're rudely interrupted by a foghorn.
That's perfectly all right. That's the beauty of live broadcasts. And how could we complain when we're lucky to be sitting by the bank of the Thames, where there's always some activity? And again, okay, I'm going to say it a second time, it's not raining.
And in terms of what an Olympic Games can do for a country's image, I mean, do you get the sense that when you're broadcasting this, you know, all around the world, that it is helping to change the way that Britain and particularly London is seen elsewhere?
Yes and no. I think that actually what did come out of the opening ceremony, as you said, Sophie, what was interesting is that eccentricity, that sense of humour, that look at itself. And I think Britain, like France, no longer have empires. We still have one superpower in town on this planet, and that is still very much the US of A. But I think that both those countries have moved on, and they have plus points, and they really need to be promoting what they're good at today. So there's a fondness for whether it's Marmalade, Marmite, the Queen, James Bond, the Tower of London, the Houses of Parliament, Big Ben, all those sorts of things. But the British are... I would have liked to see some art, by the way. I would have liked to see some fashion. I mean, Britain is really cutting edge in so much, in fashion, in art, in music. I thought that that was lacking, really. I would have liked to see that vastly promoted. And I'm not sure Paul McCartney... I'm not going to get myself into too much trouble here, but I'm not sure that that was the best way to end, you know, with Hey Jude. I think there were a few sour notes in there, and I think it would have been better if, I don't know, give Tom Jones a chance.
Well,
you know. Sing his lungs out.
Maybe for the closing ceremony they'll have Tom Jones. And also on the fashion as well, we do have Stella McCartney designed uniforms for the athletes.
Yes, I think you shouldn't really go there, actually, because I think those athletes, the British athletes, that gold on it, that's the French side of me, not liking it. Sorry, thumbs down, I'm afraid.
Club France has some rather chic people here. This is like a little island of Gallic charm. There are people with sort of wonderful little sort of red scarves on and you know, very chic. There's some chic people here. Do you wonder whether, you know, this is like a kind of little embassy for France at this time in the Olympics? Is it really where all the French people are flocking to, or is it more of a sort of corporate sort of corner of things?
Oh, very easy question there, isn't it? Right. Well, I think it's a mixture, actually. And I think that what we're going to find is... What I should point out is there are, I think, of all the nations competing, 33 that have their own pavilions, including, obviously, the US, France, etc. But only two of them are open to the public, and you're sitting in one of them. So France is one of the only ones that has, and that's a first, opening its sports embassy to outsiders and to the public. And they can be British, they can be French, they can be anything. Let's remember, 400,000 French people live in London, and the others have taken the Eurostar or coming from the rest of the UK. But I think that we'll find that there are quite a lot of other nationalities. And as for, well, the way they're dressed... you know, give a navy blue to an English woman or a British woman, and it will not be the same navy blue as the French woman. Look at stewardesses, things like that, and you'll notice it. Give the same scarf, the French woman will tie it in a very different way. There are lots of little je ne sais quoi, we say in French. My French grandmother taught me, you know, how to wear your perfume, where to put it on your body to best effect. I won't go there on this program.
Why
don't
not?
Worry.
That's a glorious deviation. I think we could talk about that for hours.
Sophie's taking notes.
Excellent. You know, the French way of doing things is the French way of doing things. And it is the je ne sais quoi, the X factor. And British women can be very elegant, but it is quite different to the French way of doing things.
It is indeed. Bénédicte Pavillot, UK correspondent.
Got herself into a lot of trouble.
No. UK correspondent for France 24. Thank you very much indeed. We're going to actually be speaking to the MP who represents those 400,000 people living here in London that Bénédicte mentioned.
She's a charming young woman, actually, and yes. A very capable one as well.
She'll be joining us just in a moment. We're going to have a bit more French music as well. All that coming up. You're listening to a very special edition of Midori House live from the River Thames.
Thailand is the world's largest exporter of rice, shipping more grains abroad than any other nation. Perhaps even more surprisingly, we're also the world's leading producer of hard disk drives, powering global electronics. And we also make great music. So from sound bites to megabytes, you could say that we're making all the right noises. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
What Cannes is to film and Venice to architecture, the city of Arles is to photography. Our Monocle film crew headed down to the south of France for the opening week of the Rencontre d'Arles, the world's leading photography festival.
Photographers love a group hug. There's a lot of talk of apertures and shutter speeds and white balance in bars and parties across town. Everyone's at it, shooting everything in sight. Everyone's got their eye on everything and how everyone else might be framing it for a shot. It's a life through a lens in Arles.
Monocle Films, focus on photography on monocle.com.
You're listening to Midori House with me, Sophie Grove and Steve Bloomfield, and this is 1,000 Times by Tahiti 80.
That was 1,000 Times by Tahiti 80. It is 18:47 here in London. You're listening to a very special edition of Midori House with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Sophie Grove. We're coming live from Club de France at the old Billingsgate Market, even on the banks of the River Thames. Now, Serge Betson was a luminary of Les Bleus rugby and a fearsome competitor. But the former London Wasp, who now lives here in London, is looking forward to the Olympic Games with the excitement of any other member of the public. A little bit earlier, our news editor Tom Edwards caught up with him here at Club de France.
I just wanted to ask you, first of all, what are your impressions of London for the Olympic Games? Are you glad to be here? Excited?
I'm really happy to be in London. I've been living in London for 4 years. Then my last club was London Wasp. And I'm really, really, really impressed of Olympics game and Olympics sports, because I can't understand why rugby is not an Olympic forever, because it's definitely the spirit of rugby, to helping each other, to see manor sports and to help the manor sport to grow. And yes, yeah, really impressive. And I really enjoyed the opening ceremony. It was fantastic, brilliant. Like sports where we saw a big surprise, a lot of emotion. And it's truly, suspense and the view of the future. And all the things was really fantastic, and really appreciate to be in London and to see Olympics.
Now, I know rugby is not featuring in the Games. I just wonder which of your other countrymen you're looking forward to seeing, other French athletes, particular ones, maybe on the track or in a swimming pool?
Yeah, and I lost my voice. I don't know if you hear. I lost my voice yesterday on the swimming pool. For the men and the women, Camille Muffat, who won the gold medal for 400 meters, and the boy who did really well and at the last second won the gold medal too, and just impressive, fantastic to see those athletes. And I'm looking forward to see Teddy Riner for the judo. I hope he's going to get a gold medal. And also handball. Handball is one of the biggest sport in France, where they won everything. The Olympics champions, the World Cup winner champions, the European winner champions. And I'm looking forward to see this team, because I don't know if you remember, for the European Games, they were beating badly, and I hope they're going to take their revenge.
Now, we talked about rugby before. Do you think rugby sevens should be in the Olympics?
In the Olympics world, rugby sevens is going to be in Olympics in 2016 in Rio.
Of course.
Then, yeah, I'm really glad to see my sport being in Olympics. It's not 15, it's not rugby union, but it's sevens. And to see sevens in the Olympics is going to be awesome. It's going to be fantastic, because country like America, country like China or India or whatever, they're going to now start developing rugby, and most of the kids going to know what is about rugby, know the value of rugby, know the skills of rugby. And I really enjoy this, and I hope they're going to increase the number of participants in the world.
I was going to say, because obviously rugby sevens is quite a different game. Did you enjoy the game, rugby sevens? It's obviously much faster.
It's fantastic. I used to play when I was younger, long time ago, play for French team rugby seven. And it's you play seven against seven in the big pitch, and it's all about speed, pace, skills, and it's enjoyable. No more working, no more scrum or line-out. Even you got three men in the line-out and three men in the scrum. But all these aspects of rugby 15 is not that much, and it's all about speed and finding the space and beating your opponent one against one. Fantastic. To see the way seven going to go to Olympics, and I think it's a very good profiling, because you talk about action, spectacular action, throwing the ball all over the place, and see a lot of try.
And just finally, Serge, I just wondered. I know François Hollande is coming this evening. You looking forward to meeting with him again here tonight?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking to see him tonight, and I hope I'm going to be on this table.
That was Serge Betson speaking to our news editor, Tom Edwards, a little bit earlier. And he's got a little bit blustery out here now, Sophie, hasn't it?
It has. And I have to confess, we just both did a runner inside to the Club France. It's really fun inside there. People are... there's this kind of beautiful singer entertaining people with some sort of French folk pop. And then people are just sort of jigging around, drinking little
There's a bar. I saw two people with champagne earlier as well. Little sort of those sort of plastic champagne flutes. Sadly, not the sort of the really nice classy glass ones.
And also, we have to also confess that we went and had our photographs taken with the Olympic torch. Well, or a replica.
No, it was one of the genuine Olympic torches.
For that, you had to stand in the EDF energy corner, but it was actually quite fun.
Yeah, and we signed something as well beforehand, which was in French, so I'm not entirely sure. Either I've signed up to something or signed away part of my life. I'm not
possibly
entirely sure.
But it was worth it.
It was.
Because actually I didn't get to see that Olympic torch relay, despite it going on for 40 days. And it was great. And it is a really fun atmosphere here. You can see people inside rooting for different various French teams. There are all these different wonderful talk radio equivalents to the sort of sport coverage going on from here, and some really great characters discussing the handball and the basketball in their little booths everywhere.
Exactly, and as Bénédicte says, I mean, this is this is a city which has an enormous number of French people in it, and also this pavilion is one of the only ones that is open to the public all the time. I know lots of the other ones are doing various different public events at different stages, but you get this real sense walking around that it's not just athletes and Olympic officials, that there are, you know, ordinary people here as well.
Definitely. I mean, it's actually a great sort of party atmosphere. I mean, you can see that the French are very positive. They seem to be very patriotic about really rooting for their people. I mean, I'm looking at some front covers of Libération is cheering on a fencer and various other divers. And there's one negative story, empty seats. There's a picture of one of the auditorium, I think it might be the volleyball, and there's about four people, and there's this kind of rows and rows of empty seats. So it's one thing that the French have also, and internationally, there's been quite a sort of disappointing reaction from that.
So far, though, the one story that hasn't been a big story so far is the traffic. However, it does seem as if the traffic has become a little bit of a problem, because our final guest, Axel Lemaire, has been stuck on the tube. So we apologise for that, but don't worry, you will still hear from her. We're going to stick around after the show, interview her, and that you'll hear that probably on tomorrow morning's Globalist and The Briefing. So instead now we're going to play a final bit of French music. This is Que Veux-tu by Yella. That was Que Veux-tu by Yell, and that's all we have time for today. The production team was Paul Noble, Dawn Trump, Adrian Craddock and Tom Edwards. Thank you to everyone here at Club France on the banks of the River Thames for being such wonderful hosts. We'll be continuing our Olympic tour tomorrow when we head to the ski lodge themed Austria House. Andrew Tuck and Rob Bound will be your alpine guides for that one. The news is next, then culture. But from all of us here at Club France, I'm Steve Bloomfield.
And I'm Sophie Grove.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.